Organizational purpose is core to business today. But how many organizations actually live the purpose that's written on their wall?
When I first joined this company, I kept saying, like, I have never felt as welcome in a company as when I joined Hyatt. And that was the first inkling of how our purpose comes to life.
That's Malaika Myers, Chief Human Resources Officer for Hyatt. Malaika is a beacon of Hyatt's purpose, which is to care for people so they can be their best. Although this purpose was formally articulated in 2015, it's arguably been in the company's DNA since its founding in 1957. As Hyatt endures the impact that COVID-19's having on the travel industry, I'm more inspired than ever by what I know will sustain and fuel them into the future, this purpose. Each Hyatt colleague is empowered to deliberately bring the purpose to life in his or her own way for guests, fellow colleagues, and other stakeholders. By continually expressing their culture of care, both in good times and bad, the Hyatt team understands the critical behavior that will help them deliver their strategy and vision.
We said to our colleagues, we want you to help that individual, whoever you encounter, to be their best. We want you to care for them so they can be their best.
I'm Meryl McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. My conversation with Malaika was recorded in January 2020. Let's dive in now. Malaika, you are one of those people that whenever your name comes up, everyone talks about how fabulous you are. So glad to have you with us today.
Meryl, I really appreciate that, but I have to tell you, I'm incredibly pleased to be here. There's a long line of very interesting people you spent time with, so I'm happy to add my name to that list.
Well, we're looking forward to it. And let's start out with, you're the head of human resources, the human resource officer for Hyatt.
Yes.
And Hyatt is known as a very purpose-driven company. So first, let's start with, what is your purpose?
Our purpose is to care for people so they can be their best.
And what does that mean to Hyatt?
That means, I'll break it down for you because I think it's helpful to do that. When we talk about people, we're talking about everyone. So not just our guests, which might be obvious, caring for our guests, which is something we do and do well, but also our colleagues, our communities, our shareholders, our owners. So we really have a broad definition for that that really encompasses anyone that we might encounter. And it is all focused on helping people to be their best. So really focused on what is it that the individual needs from us in order to be their best?
You know, it's kind of an interesting time to be talking about a purpose like that because, of course, as we know, the Business Roundtable had announced their whole initiative of really focusing on more than just shareholders. And there's been a lot of debate around that of how tough it is, right, to really make that balance. How do you think about the balance?
Yeah, I'd start by saying for us, it's helpful that we've been at this for a while. So we started our purpose work back in 2014 and 15 and officially declared it in 2015. And as you know, I'm a relative newcomer to Hyatt, so I've only been there a couple of years. But when I talk to people who've been around 30 or 40 years, what they say is that we may have articulated our purpose in 2015, but it was always there. It's always been a part of our DNA. And so I think for us, bringing that to life has been part of our legacy from, frankly, the time that the organization was formed back in the 60s. And caring for people so they can be their best is really an essential part of what we do as hoteliers, right? We welcome people into our homes, so to speak, every day around the world. And what we want for them is that they feel cared for and that we position them so that whatever they're there for, a wedding, a business trip, a vacation, that they feel that they can be their best.
So it's really an interesting concept to really be your best. How do you think about it in terms of your associates? Or you call them colleagues.
We call them colleagues, yes.
Correct.
And our business is really reliant on how well we care for our guests. And so for us, that starts with caring for our colleagues, mm-hmm. right? We can't expect them to care for others if they aren't in the right frame of mind. So we focus heavily on making sure that we are caring for them. And there are stories upon stories of how we've helped colleagues in times of need or colleagues who built their careers in the organization based on the relationships and care that we've demonstrated.
And it's interesting. Tell me why you call them colleagues.
Yeah, this is an interesting story. I think this was a debate, actually, some years ago about whether they were, I'm a colleague too, we are employees or we are associates. I think colleagues connotes a level playing field, like we are all in this together
and a sense of camaraderie and cooperation
that we want to be part of our culture. So, and I do think that that's present, and colleagues really just is the term we use to express that.
It's interesting, too, that you have a whole house of brands.
We do.
Right? A lot of different, very famous brands. And each of them have different attributes to them.
Yep.
And how do you think about that in terms of where you want a common experience for your colleagues or where it should be more brand-oriented?
Yeah. It's a great question. I'd say for our colleagues, we really do want their experience to be very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that it's the same in every brand, because obviously the facilities themselves are different across the brands, particularly based on size of hotel. But what we want the colleague to experience in terms of feeling cared for, feeling like they're known, having our properties be a place where they feel they belong, that's similar across all of our brands. And actually, it's the same for our guests. How it shows up is different, but the motivation for it in terms of our desire to care for them is the same. And so I think the common experience is feeling cared for. How it shows up could be different for both our colleagues and for our guests.
And I'm thinking about, how do you thread that across all the brands and keep that commonality?
Well, we spend a lot of time talking about our purpose.
Yeah.
And we also spend a lot of time sharing examples so that people can have a sense for how it shows up. We call them stories of care. And we have global town hall meetings once a quarter open to all of our colleagues across the globe. In most of those, you'll find us showing a story of care, which may be about how colleagues have cared for guests, but can equally be about how colleagues have cared for each other. And I think the storytelling is a big part of how you actually build that into the culture, because we give people ready examples of what does it actually look like or feel like, and what's the impact of caring for someone to help them be their best.
And how does that storytelling manifest itself? That through written pieces or you teach leaders to tell stories, or how do you do that?
Good question. We don't have a particular focus on helping leaders building capability to tell stories, but we do a lot of it through role modeling.
Mm-hmm.
So the videos are a great example. We have our Hyatt Connect website where people get on and tell their own stories. So we have leadership loops where leaders will get on and give examples of things that they're doing to advance care for our colleague or advance care for guests. So it's a lot of demonstration and example that helps us get those stories out and encourages other people to bring their stories forward.
You had mentioned that you first introduced your purpose in 2015,
yep.
That it's been in your DNA forever.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, you know, I wasn't here in 1957 when the company was formed. But what I can say is that just having now spent time with people who have been around, maybe not quite that long, but for a long time in the company's history, that as always, that comes down to leadership. And, you know, Hyatt was a family owned and run business for many, many years. And so I think that a lot of that came from the family.
Yeah.
And we have great examples of early in their history. We were we have a hotel in Atlanta that we refer to now as the Hotel of Hope. And we refer to it as a Hotel of Hope because that's how Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King referred to it. It was the only hotel back in the 60s during the Civil Rights Movement that would allow Dr. King and his colleagues to come and hold a meeting. And that's part of our history. And that says a lot about what this company was, frankly, from the start. And that has carried through to current day.
That's incredible. I wasn't aware of that. You know, and I'm just thinking, too, as you grow and expand and you acquire other properties, and we were talking earlier, you recently acquired Miraval. And how do you actually ensure that your new employees really live and follow the purpose? Is that, first of all, is that part of the due diligence when you're looking at companies?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it starts with the due diligence.
Yeah.
And making sure that there's a level of alignment. It's not, you know, they're purpose may not be the same as ours. They may not even have a purpose, but is the culture or the values align with our purpose? That's the first hurdle, and that is through the diligence process. Mm-hmm. And then after, and Miraval is a great example, we also recently acquired a number of hotels that were managed by Two Roads Hospitality. So we have four or five new brands that we've added to the portfolio. And then we spent a lot of time with those colleagues introducing mm-hmm. our purpose in much the same way we did back 5 or 6 years ago when we introduced it to all of our colleagues. So we go through a very conscious change management process so that we can help them not just read the words, but understand the feeling that's really behind it.
How does your purpose guide and drive business decisions?
Yeah, you know, I joke often with our colleagues. We meet as an executive committee every Monday morning. And I often say to our colleagues who want to know, well, what do you guys talk about? That it is rare that we go through a Monday morning session without purpose coming up. And it's not because purpose is on the agenda, obviously, but because as we talk about decisions we're making about resource allocation or people or deals and development, inevitably, someone will say, well, is that consistent with purpose? Or if we look through the lens of purpose, where would that guide our thinking? So our purpose we use as it's our North Star in terms of decision making and is the filter that we use to help us determine whether the actions we're taking are consistent with what we say we want to do in life.
Do you have purpose built into your business planning also?
It's not built into our business plan as a standalone item. Probably for everything we do, I would say it's the lens we apply on everything that we do, including our business plans.
That's terrific. And can you give me an example of how the purpose actually comes to life in the company?
Yeah, I'd say probably two examples. One is 4 or 5 years ago when we first introduced our purpose, we realized that the standard way we had for training colleagues, particularly on property, was to give them a script. Particularly those, imagine you walk up to the front desk of a hotel and you're greeted, and there was a standard script that our colleagues had to learn, and then, you know, that was how they would greet you. And for us, our purpose is all about demonstrating empathy. And you don't demonstrate empathy when you're working from a script. And so we tore up the scripts. And we said to our colleagues, we want you to help that individual, whoever you encounter, to be their best. We want you to care for them so they can be their best. And in order to do that, you have to interact with them in a human level, so that you understand who they are and why they're there mm-hmm. and how you can best care for them. So that's an example of a change we made in our business in order to help our purpose really come to life. Another thing we did also at the front desk is we had a technology system that meant our colleagues, as they're checking you in, have to go to 4 to 5 different places. And they spent a lot more time, frankly, looking down at the screen than they did looking up at the guest. And so our technology organization created an overlay for us that meant that all the information the colleague needs to check you in is there on one screen. And that allows our colleagues to spend more time interacting with the guest than they do looking down at the screen. And for us, it's that connection that really is our purpose brought to life. And we hear it and feel it in the feedback that we get from our guests.
Yeah, as a frequent Hyatt guest, I've experienced it as well.
Well,
it really did make a big difference.
I'm happy to hear that.
What do you think when people say, oh, purpose, that's like soft stuff or, you know, just airy fairy?
Yeah. I say, come work at Hyatt. Because, and I have personally worked at a number of other companies.
Big brands, big global companies.
Who, and very well run, terrific companies, some of whom had a purpose that they communicated. But I would say it is alive and well in Hyatt in a very different way. And when I first joined this company, I kept saying, like, I have never felt as welcome in a company as when I joined Hyatt. And that was the first inkling of how our purpose comes to life, because it is a warm, engaging place where people do care. And they care about you personally. They take the time to listen and to take actions to help you be better.
Well, that makes me think about, you know, I know you're a huge champion of inclusion and diversity. And you actually intentionally call it that. You put inclusion first.
Yes.
And how do you think that's actually tying into a lot of the work that you're doing with your purpose?
Yeah, I think it's impossible for anyone to be their best if they don't feel included. Right. So it's a really a prerequisite for us in terms of bringing our purpose to life is we have to be at a place where everyone feels included and feels that they belong, because you cannot do your best work if you don't feel like you belong. So it's been critical for us to continue to advance our efforts around inclusion. Specifically, that's one of the reasons we made this switch from diversity and inclusion to inclusion and diversity, which might sound like semantics or wordplay, but really was for us a reinforcement of how important the inclusion part is. Sometimes we get hung up in the diversity and the representation, and that's critical as well. But we really wanted to make sure that we didn't just have diversity, but we actually have people who feel included, who feel like they belong, and therefore feel cared for so they can do their best work.
Well, it kind of makes you wake up when you hear it backwards, right? You know, it does make you think, okay, this is different.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the challenges of a lot of the D&I programs is they often end up programs.
Yep.
And I'd just be curious to hear, what are some of the things you're doing to increase inclusion that other people could learn from? I think there's a struggle in that area.
Yeah. Frankly, we're doing some of the things that others are doing. So we have diversity business resource groups. We started a global inclusion and diversity council. But I think if I'd point to a few things that that are different for us, we spent the first half of last year really developing a workshop for our leaders about how do they lead inclusively. And that in and of itself isn't different, but I think our approach was maybe a bit different than others in that we really focused on helping leaders, first of all, understand what inclusion is, particularly when you're dealing with a global company. You know, that word doesn't necessarily translate everywhere around the world. And so we had to spend time just helping leaders to understand and asking them, like, have you ever been in a position where you felt excluded? And getting them beyond gender or ethnicity or even religion to things like, you know, surely there's been a time when you wanted to be on a team and you didn't get picked. Surely there's been a time when you wanted to be in the in crowd and you were in the out crowd.
Never happened to me.
So I think helping to just penetrate to the individual and the personal experience that then helps them to relate to the experiences of others. So I would say the focus of the training we did was very experiential. Mm-hmm. And it was also focused, you asked me earlier about storytelling. I would say storytelling really came into play there because we asked them to, in particular our general managers and our leaders, we asked them to develop their own story of inclusion. So that when people, when they talk about it with their teams or when they're asked about it, they have a personal experience that they can relate that helps the listener understand their personal view on inclusion and how it's impacted them for the good or for the bad. And that opens the door for a conversation. And that's what we've started to hear back is that that training has really opened the door to conversations. And that in the end is what we're trying to have.
What is the story of inclusion? It would be an example of what?
Well, the one I often use is that my first job was in a chemical manufacturing plant in upstate New York, and it was a small-ish plant that was probably 98% male. In fact, was 100% male in the manufacturing part. And then there were a couple of ladies in the accounting group and an HR like myself. And I walked in as a junior HR rep and walked into an environment where I'm a Black female. I was probably young enough to be their, certainly their daughter, in some cases their granddaughter. And you might think that I'm setting this up for a story of exclusion, where, because that was a pretty good setup to be excluded. On the contrary, I'd say I didn't feel excluded because they really did, I use the term adopt me, and that sounds maybe a little paternalistic, but at that time, I think that's what they did. But it's an example of where sometimes you have differences that you think mean that you're going to somehow stand out and not feel part of the group, and how a group can approach you in a way that makes those differences mm-hmm. sort of go away.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's my I have many, but that's one of my stories of inclusion, to say, you know, the way that people greet you, welcome you in, can make all of those differences, which seem big at the time, very small.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but from the program, do certain insights come to mind for you of what are common that leaders learn through this, like things that surprise them or just open their eyes?
Yeah. I think the first thing that leaders learn is what it feels like when someone is excluded. And that really comes from them thinking about and getting close and personal with their own feelings of when they've been excluded. Mm-hmm. I think it helps them then understand what the experiences of others can be. And I think the second thing that leaders learn, which has been fairly consistent, is how easy it is to actually include. So when they walk away, they're not walking away typically with big, grandiose action plans. It's simple things like, I'm going to sit at a different lunch table every day so that I have an opportunity to get to know people, or I'm going to ask people and really listen when I ask, how are you, or how is your family, or what's going on in your life, so that the actions we can take to include don't have to be big, huge things. They can be small, everyday things. And I think that's the biggest thing our leaders take away, which is, doesn't actually take a huge amount. They can move a little bit and it can make a big difference to people.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think a good one for all of us to keep in mind that there are just so many, it's small. Just extending yourself.
That's
right?
It. That's it.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So Malaika, as we think about inclusion and diversity, what about your executive committee?
Yeah, well, I'm very happy to report that our executive committee is 50% female. So there are six of us that comprise the senior leadership committee for the organization, including our CEO, and three of us are women, which means that of our CEO's direct reports, three of the five are women. And we do think that it makes a difference. I think if you ask the women on the executive committee, they'd say that. And if you ask the men on the executive committee, they'd say that. And maybe even more importantly, we get so many comments from across the organization, from our colleagues, who really appreciate looking up at the top of the organization and seeing such diversity, particularly when we're the ones talking about the importance of it. So I think setting the tone at the top in that way has been really powerful for us.
So your team has described you as someone who may not have the loudest voice, but is always respected and listened to. How do you think about that in terms of how you really lead?
Well, my first answer is I think maybe I should be a little louder. But I do think that, and I have always felt, maybe because of how the leaders that I've worked for that I've really admired have been really collaborative and open. And so that's how I try to lead. I think the best work comes when people feel like they belong and they feel they're respected and they are comfortable. And so I work really hard to put people in that place because I think that's when the best work comes. And frankly, it's when we have the most fun. So that's why I try to lead that way. And it's good to know that sometimes I'm getting it done the way I'd like to.
Certainly you are. And, you know, I think about all the different companies you've worked for, great companies mm-hmm. across many different industries. In your view, have you found that there's a commonality in terms of what makes a great leader despite the company culture? Hmm. Or do you think there's a shift?
That's a really interesting question because I've worked at companies with very different cultures.
Right. That's what I was thinking as I looked at them.
Very different cultures.
Yeah.
I think some of it's common and some of it's different. It might be the 80-20 rule, right?
Yeah.
So in the 80% category, I'd say clarity, focus, accountability, always, I think, are parts of what helps make a great leader. But then things like pace and sense of urgency, level of assertiveness, those things, I think, do differ by culture. And there are some cultures where you actually have to be pretty assertive to be successful, and other cultures where perhaps the value that's placed on relationships is much higher. And so that's actually, you need to be great at that in order to win in that culture. Mm-hmm. So I do think there is a bit of leadership that needs to shift as you move from one culture to another, and certainly a level of introspection about what culture is going to allow you to be the best leader.
In across those companies, how common were their values across one another or to one another, and how common were their leadership competencies? And I ask this question because I often find companies establish their, particularly their leadership companies, by some list they get somewhere. And I wonder, is this really dead on to this company?
Yeah, I think you're right in that there are some stated leadership capabilities that do show up, I think, on almost everyone's list. But some of it is in the subtlety of it. It might even be in the word that is chosen. So, you know, drive for results is one expression. Achieves results is another. And those might sound like the same thing. But actually, if you have one company that says drive for results and another one that says achieve results, that might actually tell you something about the difference in their culture, and that the former may be a more hard-charging, get-it-done type of environment. So while I think the list may seem similar, I would say pay attention to how it's expressed, because I think that often tells you a lot about the company.
Yeah, that's
and
really
the culture.
A good point.
Yeah.
And as you know, the concept of the podcast is how to lead when you're not always in control, right? And how you let go. What do you see that you think leaders need to let go of?
I think the biggest thing leaders need to let go of is fear. I think fear stops people from giving their best. It stops them from expressing their ideas. Sometimes it stops them from expressing their doubts when their doubts could actually be helpful. In terms of whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. I think there are all sorts of fears that drive us as human beings. I once heard this saying that said, and it stuck with me, that there are only really two emotions in the world, love and fear.
Yeah.
And we act out of one of those two. Everything we do flows from one of those two. And so personally, I try to press myself to make sure that I'm acting out of love and not acting out of fear. And I think leaders who act more out of love than they do out of fear are more successful.
That's obviously a way that you've really addressed that for yourself. Mm. How do you help address it for the people you lead?
I think for me, it goes back to that, help people feel comfortable, because the fear comes when you're not clear on where you stand, or you're not clear on the perception of you or how you're being judged or what it is you're supposed to do. And so to the extent you can eliminate that, you take the fear away and you allow the people on your team to do their best and to operate out of a place where they are comfortable. I work hard, particularly with the folks on my direct team, to let them know, look, I value you and I appreciate you. And that does not mean that I think you're never going to screw up, right?
Yeah.
Because we all screw up.
Yeah.
And I'm still going to value and appreciate you, even if you do screw up. I don't want you to, but it won't shift that. And I think there's such power from people being in that place to know I have the freedom to do my best, even though sometimes I know that will mean that I blow it. I make a mistake.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's something that I know that's something I work hard at. And it's something that, particularly as companies focus more and more on innovation and agility, we all have to focus on reducing the fear, because fear is a barrier to innovation and agility.
Yeah, it certainly is. And a lot of companies are really struggling with that, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's the mix of not wanting people to be afraid, but also having a lot of pressure.
You don't want people to be afraid, and you don't want to screw up. So
right.
It's not it's not an easy balance to strike. But I know that if you can get people to that place, you have to raise your risk tolerance.
Yeah, you know, I read a really interesting article in the Harvard Business Review, and it was around innovation. And the point was that really to have innovation, everyone thinks you need to make mistakes, be free, try things. And they said for every one of those, there's the opposite. And I thought it was so interesting because it's okay to fail needs to be balanced by competence. And I thought, you know, I mean, at first that sounds so weird, but I was thinking, you know, that's such a true thing. And it, incompetence, it doesn't mean when you're incompetent that you're a totally useless individual. No, it just means you don't have the skills for that job or that role, right? I don't know. What do you think of that?
I think that's true. I think everything that I've said about my team or any team that I've led is predicated on their strong, talented people. Right, who have the competence they need. Because if that's not true, then you do need to provide a lot more support and there's less degrees of freedom available to that person and to you because you're trying to support them or help figure out what they're really brilliant at if they're not brilliant at whatever role they're in. But I think you do have to have competence in order to balance that with this sort of increased risk tolerance. But my view would be that we focus a heck of a lot on the competence. We focus a lot less on the freedom.
Yeah.
So I think most companies have the reason they're focused on this is not because they don't have competent people in place. It's because we're trying to figure out how to give them more freedom so that they can be more innovative and more creative.
Thank you so much. This was a fantastic interview, and I'm just so pleased to have you join us.
Well, thank you, Meryl. You made this easy, so I appreciate that, and it's been a pleasure.
I'm so inspired by Malaika's leadership and also Hyatt's commitment to living its purpose. Let's recap a few key learnings. First, embrace storytelling to build your culture. At Hyatt, the team tells what they call stories of care to share best practices and recognize the impact that living the Hyatt purpose has on colleagues and guests. Second, if your organization is working to create an environment of belonging, consider your personal inclusion story. What did that experience feel like for you? How can you channel that experience to help you lead more inclusively with your team? Third, don't overthink what it takes to make people feel seen or heard. It could be simply sitting at a new lunch table, asking people about their families, and then really listening. The small, everyday actions add up and can make a big difference. Lastly, remember that fear drives doubt and prevents people from expressing themselves or sharing ideas. If you feel fear in any area of your job, work to get clarity on where you stand, how you're doing, and what you're accountable for delivering. Don't let fear hold you back. Work to act out of love instead. Thanks again to Malaika for the great learnings and conversation. Until next time, this is Let Go and Lead.